Good evening. Tonight's share, of course, is all on one topic. The whole parsha, very rarely as it is, has to do with one particular person, and it's, well, not only one person, but one topic. And it begins, this is a hemshech from last week's parsha to this parsha. Excuse me. Okay. Last week's parsha ended, of course, with the parsha's Hamaraglim, and ended with the parsha of Tzitzis. And of course, Korach approaches Moshe with a evil intent, obviously, because he wants only for his self-aggrandizement. He wants something that God doesn't want him to have. And this is where we have a problem, because if you think about it, Korach was not an ordinary person. He's a very complex person. We have to realize that up to this point in time, Korach has been a tzaddik. He is from Shevet Levi, and after the anger where Moshe said, Mil Hashem Elai, Vayesku Elov Kol B'nei Levi, Korach was among his chief supporters. And many other times at this point, because Levi, basically, they learned from their mistakes of Shimon and Levi, as we see in Bereishis. They learned from their mistakes. Shimon did not, but Levi learned, and that's why they were zochet to the Kedusha through the Yitzchus of Amram and Moshe. When we think of Amram having three children on the level of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, it's incredible for one set of parents to have three children and have them all attain such greatness. It just tells you the greatness of the parents, how much they deserve credit for that. But nevertheless, Korach has been a tzaddik till now. But right now the problem becomes Korach is looking for a time to strike, and the time is ripe now, because last week the parsha was the parsha of Shlach, when all men of 20 and up are now basically what we would call today dead man walking. They've been told Yitamu v'sham yamusu. They had been promised to go into the land, but after the sin of the Meraglim, they were going to languish in the desert for 40 years and never see the promised land. And of course now, with all the displeasure that they had towards Moshe, Korach felt that this was the right time to strike. Why did Korach pick? What was the problem? What was the basis of his argument? Very simply because Uvnei Kahas, the children of Kahas, were Amram v'Yitzhar, Hebron v'Uziel, and therefore Amram was the oldest. So therefore the presidency, so to speak, the kingship, is only fair to go to Moshe, the son of the Bechor. But then since Yitzhar was the next son, he felt he should get the next nod, and the Kohuna Gadola should be to him. The problem is, we see over here, and there's a reference to it in the Chumash over here, when the parsha starts, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohaz ben Levi, V'dasom v'Aviram ben Eliyav, V'ol ben Peles ben Eruvain. It tells us the major characters in the dramatis personae that are going here. But then the next pasuk says, Vayakumu lifnei Moshe, and they were standing before Moshe. In other words, these are the chief participants who are doing all the talking. But afterwards it says, Vanashim ibnei Yisrael hamishim u'masayim. It does not say, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohaz ben Levi, V'dasan v'Aviram v'ol ben Peles b'nei Ruvain, and hamishim u'masayim ish. In other words, Korach was the ringleader, obviously, and Dasan v'Aviron, and maybe a little bit on Bepelis, even though he did not continue with the fight because he had nothing to gain. His wife finally convinced him of that. But nevertheless, the other 250 people were just mob support, and that was the problem. You have something to complain about. The thing to do is to go privately to Moshe. That's what he should have done. He could have avoided thousands upon thousands of deaths. Of course, we know the end result was a Mageva of 24,000 people perished because of their just not paying attention to the surroundings of what was going on. But nevertheless, by Vayakumu lifnei Moshe, and Korach decided to bring support, thinking that God would not strike down so many people who are people of the Sanhedrin. You're thinking of these are the great people. The question that somebody else asked me tonight in a previous year was, why should all the other people, I mean, they didn't do anything to stop these people. And, of course, that is always the crime. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And we always know that. And so that will be the end of the story. But getting back to the beginning of the story, they come, supposedly, we are told, that they came with a talis, that had all the entire talis for tcheles. And we know that one strand of tcheles fulfills your obligation to put on a talis so that you could wear a beged, a four-cornered garment. You could wear it as long as you have one string of tcheles in each corner, and then you're allowed to do that. So they said, what about a talis that was all tcheles? Since one strand would fulfill your obligation, what about if the talis was made, all the entire talis was blue? It's a seemingly a good question, but Moshe's rationale for saying that it would not be kosher, it needs that one strand of tcheles, because the pasuk in the end that we learned from Parshas Tzitzis, where he says, "Uriisem oso," oso meaning it, not them. So not the entire beged, but what's behind that is one very simple thing. What we are always looking to strike in Judaism is to show every Jew, to make every Jew realize that we're not the same as the rest of the world. We are different. We are different in every way. So when you see that one strand of tcheles, it's contrasted to the white strings that are over there and this one blue. We represent the tcheles. Not that it just reminds us of the heavens and the sea, which are blue. We remind us of the heavens and that God is in the heavens. It goes through all of that. We mentioned that last week. But nevertheless, it's the contrast. The same way when we put a mezuzah on the door and he asked the question, what about a place that is full of svarim? Does it need a mezuzah too? It's full of svarim. Why would it need a mezuzah that has all the parshas that are in a mezuzah? And the answer is, again, once you see a mezuzah on a doorpost, you know you're walking into a Jewish home. And that is why, that's how we make a lot of halachas. In fact, the Chassan Sofer we don't know when when it became an official decree that one should be wearing, one must wear a yarmulke. It was always necessary to wear a head covering at certain times. Certainly when you're davening, you're making brachas, or whatever you're doing in terms of a spiritual nature, then you would have to wear your head covering. The Gemara talks about that. But at other times, possibly not. Of course, if we're living in a country where it would be dangerous or we feel very uncomfortable, it wouldn't have to be. But it became mandated from the time of the Chassan Sofer when it became the rule of the church as a sign of respect every time they entered a building, when they entered the church, to take their hat off their head as a sign of respect. Then it became a must for a Jew to make sure that he is wearing a head covering. And the same thing that we have with marriages, when the church decreed that weddings should be formed in a church, you notice that we have locally anyhow that most weddings are performed not in a synagogue, they performed outside in a catering hall. In New York, you see, pretty much we have catering halls. Out of town, there's not always one available, but basically one does not have the affair in a shul. Of course, like I said, sometimes they do, but there are a lot of people who are very particular not to make any kind of affair in a outside, and that was a decree from the Chassan Sofer as well in the early 1800s. We are always trying to set ourselves apart. Korach was being the Democrat here. Korach wanted to show that we all have God within us. We learned in the end of Parshas Bo, Kadosh Li Kol Bechor, everybody is, we're all equal. We all have God within us. The problem with Judaism is having God within you is not enough. It's everything is lishmar velasos. You could, zechira comes with shmira, zechor is yom ha-shabbos, but the shomor is yom ha-shabbos. And that's where Korach is making, the God is within us, we feel him, we feel his presence, and we believe in it, but I have 613 mitzvahs, and we have to abide by them, or else it means nothing to be a Jew at heart, doesn't account for too much. It's a good start, perhaps, but it doesn't toe the line. But we're going along with these people. To me, the biggest question of the week is, is how could it be possible here? We have a situation, because limited time over here, there's so much to say, that Korach finally got Moshe. He comes with the mopsy, and he could have avoided this whole thing by coming to Moshe privately. As we said last week with Shlach, everything could have been avoided if the Meraglim had come back, and in being like, if you're in the army and you have to get, if you send out on a mission, you come back, if you would discuss all of what you were sent out on your mission to discuss with the regular troops, that would be a court-martial offense. You go and you're debriefed by your commanding officer. The same thing when the Meraglim came back, they should have and could have gone to Moshe, avoided all of this unnecessary tzaras, saving the lives of 600,000 men by just coming to Moshe and be debriefed, and Moshe would set them straight. The same thing, Korach could have come to Moshe privately, but as a show of force, he brought 250 people with him. And then Moshe says, God tells him, he badlu mitocho eda. But the amazing thing is at this point, Moshe says, I understand that you're God, you're going to kill them now. But the difference is, if they just die a natural death, after last week, the story of Meraglim, when they would decree that they would die in the Midbar, if they just go to sleep tonight and they don't wake up in the morning, they might be considered to have died a natural death, the same way all the people were decreed to pass away in their sleep in the next 40 years. And there was nothing wrong with the argument that they had. The problem is that it came their time to die, and that's why they died, these 250 people. But so Moshe says, but, you know, you have to create Vim Briya Yivro Hashem Ufasiso Adamo Aspio Vola. So you have to create something new that will really shake them up and understand. The ground will open up Ufasiso Adamo Aspio Vola Samyas Pate Envies Kola Yakuma Shel Kora, and everything will be destroyed. And Vayodu Mitoch HaKohol. The interesting phrase is Vayodu Mitoch HaKohol. What is the addition of that is that they were not here and not there. And it says, Biogon Sheola, Biardu Chayim Sheola. What is Sheol? We see the same thing by, where did we see the word Sheol the first time? It's by Yosef. When the Yaakov is told that Tarof, Tarof Yosef, that he suspects that Yosef was torn, he's trying to use his Nebuah to see where Yosef is. And he's totally confused and depressed because he doesn't see Yosef in the world of the living, and he doesn't see Yosef in the world of the dead either. So where could he be if he's in this, what we would call perhaps, using a comic book term, the phantom zone, if he's in that, in a state of limbo, if he's in that area, that would really set him apart. And there is no, we know, we come to shul, when we say Yizkor, we have a relationship with those, our dear departed family members. We have a relationship with them. We pray to them to some degree. We ask them to be a Melech Yosher, and we think of Tchias HaMeisim that eventually will be reunited. But Vayovdu Mitoch HaKohol, God wanted them to be totally, and Moshe the same thing, totally separate, that there will be no longer any contact. It's as if they never existed in the first place. No remembrance of them whatsoever, using them as an example. And when that happens, you would think that everybody at this point, seeing that the ground open up and swallow up these 250 people, that would really shake them up. And now they would all fall into line. And amazingly enough, doesn't happen. They still descend upon Moshe. Somebody asked me tonight, what about all the other B'nai Yisrael? They were just standing there. Nobody supported Moshe to shout down the people. The same way Yehoshua or the others from the Meraglim last week, other people could have come along and say, shout down the Meraglim. And so, but like we say all the time, and it's very true, you're not part of the solution again, you're part of the problem. And it causes tremendous amount of death. You have to speak up and say something. And the rest of the people over here, they still descended upon Moshe and still complained. And they said, Atem, Hamitem, Esam Hashem, not only are we not, you know, we were promised that we were going to go into the promised land, and now you took away that too. We're not even going, Aflo, Aleret, Sabas, Falohu, Devosh, Avio, Sonu. We're not going into the land. Our Yerusha, all right, so it's going to go to our children, great. But we're not even going into the land. And God is already fed up at this point in time. And it says that Aaron, even though he was the basis of the problem, he still had everybody's best interest at heart. And he goes ahead, he, so to speak, drew a line in the sand. The problem is, if we take a look, what is the language that used in the parish, the language that's used is always, we look at it and we see, when Korach is about to die, and God tells Moshe to tell the people to separate themselves, he says, Ibadlu, separate yourself from the rest of the crowd. The language again, in English it says, once again, separate, but the language in the Chumash doesn't use from the rest of the people before the plague begins for the second wave of death. Does not say he bodalu mitochu edo hazos. It says he romu mitochu edo. English meaning separate yourself. But the difference is very simple. By he bodalu mitochu edo, the mashkis was not given, the angel of death was not given permission to kill Korach. God had to make a special, the ground open up so that they fell. The mashkis had no shilton over here. He did not do this. God opened up the earth and they fell down. The Ardu Chayim Sheola. They fell down into the earth. The earth swallowed them up alive. But by the Magefa, that is where the mashkis comes into play. Hey Romu is the significance is we say Kivin Shenitain Rishus Lamashkis. When the angel of death is given permission, the tzaddikim go down with the Rishayim. There's no difference. The angel of death has the ability to kill everybody. And that's what happened here. And 24,000 people in a matter of seconds perished. It staggers the mind that after they witnessed the ground opening up, they still descended upon Moshe. Maybe not, certainly not all of them, but nobody stopped the people who did. It's a tremendous lesson. 24,000 people died in a matter of seconds, not like the students of Rabbi Kiva who took weeks to pass away, the 24,000 students. Here, 24,000 died in a few seconds. And only Aaron with his ketores. But what would cause them to think that they could get away with this again? And the answer lies, as the Abravanel makes an interesting point, once again, he harps on the language. And he tells Elazar to take their machtos, why? And to fashion them over the Mizbeach, to put them around, take the fire pans and put them, cover the Mizbeach. And why did he tell Elazar? Because it wouldn't be right. Aaron was one of the litigants, so to speak, in this trial. And so therefore wouldn't be right to use Aaron as an example. And he tells Elazar, so to speak, not one of the people involved in the dispute, and Elazar takes the fire pans and he takes the copper from their fire pans and puts it over the mizbeach, and then the next line says v'yeshu esh zerei hola, and what does it say? And throw out the fire, meaning what? What is the symbolism of that language? And the symbolism is they thought perhaps that the reason that those 250 people had to die was the same reason that Nadav and Avihu brought an Ezra Zorah by the Mizbeach, or fire that they wouldn't do. And now that he put their copper fire pans on the Mizbeach and threw out the fire, they felt maybe that was the reason, because they brought a fire that they weren't supposed to bring, and of course they had to die. But basically, their argument was correct. And unfortunately for them, they saw differently. And now the mashchis steps in and he says, you could wipe them all out. But Aaron being the person that he wants. And the lesson we get from this is who do we want for leaders? Basically, it sounds almost, we want people, of course, you want our nevus, but you want people who are not looking for the gedula, who are not looking for the greatness. They don't want the job. They're drafted. People who want the job, Korach wanted the job, and Aaron even didn't. And we see that the language, and again, it says, he uses the word avodat matonah. God wants to say to Aaron, trying to convince him that even though you have a phenomenal responsibility here to do all the things that you're being told to do, but believe me, it will become, it's a gift. And we see that. And what God is telling us here, once again, the message behind this is that sometimes it seems on the surface that all the things that we do and breaking our head over sometimes learning Chumash or learning Mishnayos or learning Gemara, for those of us who do, it becomes a very difficult task. But as we learn more and more and we get more used to doing things properly, we begin to understand, and when we begin to understand everything we do, it's a labor of love. And even though it's difficult, we lose sight of the difficulty and we begin to enjoy it. And sitting and learning Gemara, thank God, when I was a kid and the Rebbe would say, how could you want to do anything but sit and learn? You have the opportunity. And of course, I would say I'd much rather be at the ball game. I'd much rather be at the movies or whatever else I could do. But we reach a point, if we really immerse ourselves, to a point where we let ourselves totally get into it, it's more than like not being able to put down a good book, but we begin to understand what the messages are and the deeper meaning behind everything that we learn. And once you begin to appreciate, it builds inside you and makes you really appreciate, and it really becomes an avodas matanah. You begin to understand what a gift that the Torah is, that is difficult as some of the things seem on the outside. Once we get used to getting up in the morning and davening and saying our prayers and learning whenever we can and building on that, the knowledge makes us stronger and it becomes, as I said, a labor of love. Possibly, if I remember, next week we'll have to continue. There are so many little things that are left out that are very important, but the hour is growing late. I wish everybody a good week, and perhaps I'll take a look and see what I covered today, and we'll finish the parasha next week. There'll be more time, perhaps. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Yeshkoa.
Thank you. If you have any questions, you could ask if you have anything you want to say, and go ahead.
Rabbi, I had heard in a shir that one of Esav's descendants was called Korach. And
you take a look at the end of Vayishlach.
Korach, from Shira Smiles, she said in her shir, I just want to give her credit, that some of the DNA of Esav went into Korach because he used the same strategy, tricking the father, Esav. Korach tricked Moshe with his questions.
That's an interesting philosophy, and it's a very interesting thought, but you certainly can't look at it askance because, like you say, we have DNA. A lot of times you find things when you find out about your ancestry. There are certain proclivities that everybody develops, and then you begin to see family members, and that's why the parasha begins when it says eventually by Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron, our Kohen, is always to tell us where those traits that led him to what he was doing. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhak ben Kohos ben Levi, and you're right, why doesn't it say ben Yaakov? Why does it stop by Levi? Because as we know from Levi in Parashat in Bereshit, Levi was a hothead. And therefore,
right.
And his uncle was Esav, but he didn't have the only part that I don't like is that he didn't have any real association with Esav, but the reality was it's still knowing about Esav and how he got away with a lot of
things. But he says,
yes, go ahead.
But Esav says, Yesh li Rav, and Korach says, Rav lechem. And also, Esav, he takes 400 men with him when he's going to meet his brother, and Korach uses the same strategy as herd mentality. So there are three similarities, major similarities between Esav and Korach, and Korach has in his name Kerach, which means ice. So, and he's motivated by Kina, just like Esav was motivated by Kina when his brother was given the birthright through prophecy. So it appears that maybe Korach really, you know, like you said, Levi was hot-headed. Maybe in some way it trickled down into Korach. He knew about Esav.
Well, I'm sure he knew about Esav. His last meeting with Esav was at the funeral of Yaakov, right? His head was lopped off by Chushan ben Don.
Right, right.
Chopped off the head of it. So what he learned was to be a killer, to be, you know, to stand up for rights, but not necessarily at this point in time. Levi was considered by God to be a big tzaddik, and that's why he was, zochet to have all his family tree was Kahus and Amram, all these people, obviously. But there is that DNA. You never know where it comes from.
You never know where it comes from. So that would be interesting.
Brother, when you're choosing a husband, look for your wife's brother, which is what the Gemara tells us to do. Correct. Yeah, all these things play a part. Absolutely. But there's an interesting thing that you mentioned, but it's Hakina, Hakaiva, Hakavot, all these things, these traits that, you know, jealousy and, the desire to be great just for your own self-aggrandizement. It says in the Perek that we read this week, and I wonder sometimes if they set it up that way. It's in Perek Revi in Perek this week, and it very much applies to the Parsha that we read this week. It's very interesting. So we read this week the Parsha, and in the Perek that's from this that we look on the calendar, Perek Revi, it says, Motzien es Adam min ha'olam. This is what takes you out of the world. It's going to kill you. You have to control yourself. And unfortunately for Korach, he let his desire for greatness get the better of him.
Oh, there's another thing, too, that Esav's feelings of serving remained in the cognitive domain. So, he served his father, but his... it really didn't filter down in any other way besides the fact that he served his father, and that no Jew can reach his level.
Esav was the total phony, and if you know what we use a lot of times is it seems to be meaningful, and sometimes it's used as almost like a joke. But gematria means the value of the letters in a word that add up to. It's the same letters of one word add up to the same numerical value of the words of another word, and it gives you like a thought. And Esav adds up to the letters in the alphabet that are Esav add up to 376. The word shalom also adds up to 376. So one of my rabbis wrote as a sort of like a joke to say what it means is, yes, Esav believed in the whole concept of peace. The only difference is there's two ways to spell peace. Esav wanted peace, but he wanted a piece of this and a piece of this and a piece of this. He wanted a piece of everything. So that's the kind of peace that Esav sought. And Korach just felt he was a great, he was Rockefeller. He was one of the richest people who ever lived. And he wanted to exhibit the strength. And Dasam Vaviram was still trying to get even with Moshe because as Chazal tell us in the beginning of that was Dosum Vaviram, Rashi says, and Moshe chastised them for getting into a fight. And they still had it in for him. And now came the time. Why? Because, like I said, they were dead man walking. Since they were going to be relegated to dying in the Midbar, they were waiting for the moment to strike. And they felt this was a good time to build up animosity towards Moshe and question his leadership.
Oh, that's a fabulous insight. Thank you so much. I just didn't know if, I've been thinking about this thing with Esav and Korach. And also in Korach's name, you have Rake and Kar.
Well, Korach, what the Gemara says about the name Korach is that it means somebody who's Kereach, who he's bald. That Korach was bald because that's what the name signifies. Somebody who's bald is a Kereach. If you take a look in Parshas, in Tazria Metzora, he uses the word as somebody who's bald when he has no hair.
Oh, that's interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
This doesn't tell you anything, but all right.
But, all of this, it's interesting insights. Thank you for pointing out
why I want to go into more, because there's so much left unsaid tonight. I have my share earlier in the evening on the parsha was 50 minutes, and I still left. And so I was looking what to leave out and what to say. So I try to give one complete thought, and then there's a lot of sidelights to the parsha that we didn't cover, even though it's one topic,
Another question, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind.
Shalamit Bat Dibri was the wife of Datan. So my question is, in Pirkei Avot, it says you must greet people. In other words, you don't wait for them to greet you. Yet she's punished, they say, because she greeted people too much. So what does that mean? That means if you walk by...
Of course, when it says you're supposed to greet people, it means that women are supposed... appreciate after the first temple was destroyed, the Chachamim prayed for the abatement of a little bit of the sexual desire. Yeah, because it was so great that people just couldn't control themselves. And so they tried to eliminate it, but of course everybody stopped getting pregnant, animals weren't giving birth, and God had to give it back to a certain level. But we don't appreciate how difficult it was. And for a woman to show herself at all was not just that it was unseemly, it aroused the man. So when it says that you're supposed to greet people, it's talking about one man to another or one woman to another.
Well, what happens if you... Look, I speak French, and there's a security guard in one of the supermarkets who's Haitian. So I wish him a good week. He's
fine.
A human
not
being.
A so the difference is a major difference. And the difference is that you're in public. We're basically talking more about things in private. If I would call on the phone and say, I want to talk to Jeffrey, nothing wrong with that. But if I was want to say to Jeffrey, put your wife on the phone. I want to speak
to her.
That was on the surface, that's off limits. There are, of course, you could have a question, and on the phone there's nothing happening. But I mean, that whole idea, the Gemara chastises Rabbi Meir's wife because somebody stopped along the way, or she stopped along the way. She was looking to a man stopped her along the way and said he didn't know directions. And he said, what's the road that goes to Akko? And instead of giving him directions, which she was capable to do, she chastised him for talking to her. You shouldn't be talking to a woman. He said, well, what could I do? He said, you could have said less. You could have said, what should I have said? how do I, you know, I could have shortened the phrase, but it said he could have shortened it even more. You could have looked and raised your hand and said, Akko, I would have known that you're asking. It's trying to tell us that, like you have in Pirkei Avos, al parbesicha im ha'isha. So it says, even with your wife. What do you mean? You shouldn't talk to your wife? You have to talk to your wife. I mean, that's what a marriage is all about. But what the explanation given in Perek is, it depends what you're talking about. If you have to deal with family matters or various things that you have to talk to, have family matters about, of course you have to talk to your wife. But if somebody did something to you at work, and you come home and say, you know what happened today at work, this happened, and you say, yeah, but I don't care. Your wife is going to say to you, are you going to let him say that to you? And she gets you all worked up, and you get yourself into trouble because she egged you on. That's what it means. Don't say too much.
Oh.
But don't overdo it. Be careful, because they, if you're insulted, they're insulted. But but this is what happens many times. Somebody spurs you to do something that you don't even want to do. So be careful what you say. The less you talk, the better.
That's true. Thank you so much. And please tell Rebbetzin Rivka that it was great seeing her at the shir today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for your class, Rabbi. Yashar Koach. It was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.